All righty, welcome back everyone to the Bibliotheques podcast. I'm joined by Cody as always, and today we are reading and discussing Death on the Nile, chapters 6 through 13. Cody, things are starting to heat up on the Nile for our gang.
There has been a murder, and you are a suspect.
It is kind of bad as I'm reading this. I'm just like picturing Daniel Craig, Benoit Blanc walking around.
Oh, yeah, dude. Benoit Blanc is just like, it's so funny that like a British guy is doing the best, like terrible Southern accent. And I'm like, yeah, that's my like generation of detective.
Yeah. Yeah. The donut hole.
Inside the donut hole.
This was a great section of reading, especially towards the end. We have a little bit more of keeping everybody waiting. So we'll keep you in a little bit of suspense today. But like I said, we're covering chapters 6 through 13. We've got a lot to get through today. I'll start with a recap of last week. We can do our discussion and recap of the reading for this week. And then we'll end with a little whodunit in our upstreams and downstreams for the week. So last week, we met Lene Ridgway, who basically stabbed her best friend Jackie in the back by stealing Jackie's fiance and getting married to him, this guy named Simon Doyle. So Lene Ridgway is now Lene Doyle. The two of them are on their honeymoon in Egypt, and Jackie is following them around trying to get under their collective skin. Jackie has also said that she is totally down to like kill one of them eventually. So she said this to our detective named Hercule Poirot. So also in Egypt, Hercule Poirot, obviously, as I just said, he's there on holiday. We've got another set of characters. So Tim and his mother, Mrs. Allerton, they got some mysterious letter last time from one of Lene and Tim's friends named Joanna. They decided to go to Egypt to join all of the shenanigans going on down there. We've got Rosalia, even though it's just Rosalie. Rosalie Otterborn and her mother, Mrs. Otterborn. Seemingly, they're just in Egypt because they were sick of staying in Jerusalem. We've got Andrew Pennington, who is referred to as Uncle Andrew frequently. He's Lene's American trustee. He goes to Egypt after hearing about Lene's marriage. He's there to do something, but he's also trying pretty hard to make it just look like a coincidence that he ran into Lene and didn't know about her marriage previously. We've got an old lady, Miss Van Schuyler, who came with her nurse, Miss Bowers, and her much younger relative, Cornelia Robson. They're just there on vacation, presumably. Miss Bowers is throwing some weird vibes before they go. We've got Jim Fanthorpe, finally, who was sent by his uncle, William Carmichael, in a hurry to Egypt for some reason after receiving a letter from Lene, but we don't really know exactly why he's there yet. And not mentioned on our trip yet, but we want to make sure that we're not losing sight of them entirely, is Lene's friend Joanna and her previously scorned potential fiancé, Charles Windlesham, who, after getting rejected by Lene, ran off to Canada. So in case you forgot, because I almost did when I started reading this time, those are our characters. They're all in Egypt right now. And right now, all we're really going through is just some tense shit with Jackie essentially stalking Lene and Simon around on their honeymoon. And that's where we pick up this week with chapter 6.
So chapter 6 begins with Poirot having a conversation with Simon Doyle, Lene's recent betrothed, asking him just like, hey, let's go take a walk. I have just spoken with your wife and your former fiance, and I just got to talk to you, man. During the walk, Simon's like, hey, man, did you manage to talk some sense into Jackie? Is she like chill now? He's like, no, dude, far from it. Told me some pretty unchill things. And he's like, well, I just like, you know, want to make sure that she doesn't think that I broke off our engagement and married Lene because she's super rich. Like, I'm not a gold digger. And Poirot's like, all right. Like, I didn't ask that, but thank you for volunteering that information.
Yeah.
Basically, he tries to come to the conclusion that, like, he just got swept off his feet by Lene and Jackie was like too into him, and that was a big turnoff for him. Like, and then Poirot mutters the same French phrase that we talked about last episode about like one who loves and one who wants to be loved. And Simon's like, "What did you say?" And he's like, "Don't worry about it."
Don't worry about it, Doyle.
And Poirot's like, "Look, dude, she's mad because it was clearly harsh of your way to cancel your engagement with Jackie and then like virtually immediately turn around and marry her old friend Lene." And Simon's like, "Look, that's just like a huge coincidence. It's all fine." And he's like, "Also, you know what else is a coincidence? Mr. Pennington being on this trip. Isn't it crazy that like her uncle and like estate trustee is here?" And Poirot's like, "Yeah."
Yeah. We'll get more into that, but it's Poirot makes it pretty clear that he's not entirely bought in on that coincidence as
no
right now.
And he's also not bought in on like any of these people. He's like, "No. I've just heard three totally different versions of how these relationships ended and started and why everyone's really here."
Interesting though. Do you know what I think is really interesting about Poirot? I agree with you, Cody. He feels some sort of attachment to Jackie, oddly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partly because, assuming Jackie isn't just playing some kind of weird ruse here, right? She is very authentically hurt, heartbroken, and like is very vulnerable with Poirot. And so she's not like mincing words or anything. And so I think he feels like he can trust that because it's coming from a very real place.
Yeah, he's definitely like, he talks to Jackie and like believes what she says when she's like, "I got a gun and I'll kill him." Like, that's actually the least believable thing for him. He's like, "You sound like you, I don't know if you have it in you." And we'll get even more of that later. But he's like doubtful of like very different parts of everyone's story, where like he's like, "I actually believe that the Jackie part of the story where it's like I introduced my fiance to my friend who's like perfect in every way and she just fucking stole him out from under me." He's like, "That's probably the most logical thing of what you just told me." Mm-hmm. And then when he's talking to like Simon, he's like, "Look, like I'm not a gold digger. Like, I don't want you to think that of me." And he's like, "Whatever." But then he's like, "I got swept off my feet by Lene and I actually was unattracted to how into me Jackie was." And Poirot's like, "I can probably buy that." And then when he's talking to Lene,
yeah, I also find it interesting that he used the same sun and moon metaphor to describe it that Jackie had previously.
Right.
Very interesting.
Right. And then with like talking to Lene, she's like, "Oh, I don't believe I did anything wrong. Like, she shouldn't be mad at me for what I did." He's like, "No, you did a very like bad thing." But then she's like, "I'm very afraid of the situation I've created for myself." And he's like, "Okay, I believe that." So there's lots of like, he's kind of picking and parsing what to believe from all these people's stories. And that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah. I mean, do you think we learned anything about Simon worth noting in this chapter in terms of either his character or motive for a potential murder later on?
I mean, he just seems pretty self-absorbed.
Okay.
He's just a climber. And I think at this point in the story, that's kind of all I can gauge from him.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair to say. I'm kind of buying into the fact that like he was kind of just swept off his feet by Lene and money isn't everything.
I think so. I mean, we're going to get it a little bit later that him and Lene have pretty different concepts of money.
Right.
So I would buy that. And that's why I'd say that. I think that, you know, Poirot especially also believes that like, you know, Lene is like this angelic presence. And it seems like she'd be a pretty intoxicating person to be around. And it's like, you know, just so happened like Windlesham. She just so happens to also be the richest woman in England.
So at this point, we have three different accounts of the events involving Lene, Jackie, and Simon. They're all pretty close. Jackie's and Simon's are actually very close. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting that like, despite not having, you know, all three people in the same room, like we're getting... Nobody seems to be just lying outright about something that happened. It's all little stuff, like little details, right? Maybe
it's like those little like lies you tell yourself to like protect your own ego.
Yeah. Cody, I've got a wild take that I wrote down after reading this chapter, and I'm going to say it now because it might not make as much sense if I said it at the end of this chapter or this section. At the end of this chapter, I was like, is it possible that Jackie and Simon are working together to fucking like defraud Lene?
I definitely thought of that throughout this chapter,
like,
or this section as well. Like, it,
what if what Poirot thought he was overhearing in the restaurant that night is the beginning of some scheme between Jackie and Simon, where Simon isn't super on board with just like robbing this woman of everything she has?
Here's why I think that, I still think that may be a possibility, but I don't think that it would have started in the cafe that Poirot overheard. Because to do that, they're counting on Lene being so enamored, like love at first sight, infatuated with Simon, that she breaks it off with Windlesham and marries him outright. Which, like, if the whole crux of your plan is like, you're so hot, you can just do that.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily buy that. However, I do think that like when they meet, because like the whole point was like, because we're trying to get Simon a job regardless, right? Mm-hmm. So then maybe they're like scheming to get into her good graces because like she, like Jackie's out of money too. But then they're like, but then Simon's like, hey, she actually, like when you were gone, she's like about it. Like, can we escalate this further? Like, we might not just get access to the books. Like, we could get access to the whole goddamn thing. That's yeah. kind of where I think if they were going to do like some type of like deranged love triangle double cross, it would have to be after the interview where Lene's like, hey, Simon.
Yeah.
Like,
what's the up, one man? Other thing, like the calculus, the reasoning.
Time for a little game theory, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. What was going on in my head was like, if Jackie knows Lene well enough, would she know enough to bet on the fact that Lene couldn't stand it, that Jackie had something that she didn't? And so it goes back to that mention of the ewe lamb from the Bible, where like David takes the poor man's wife, you know? And I'm just like, I'm wondering how much that could factor into things. But anyway, theories for another time. Take accountability hour.
But the thing is, like, if that's the case too, why would Jackie then make herself like a classic? I don't know. I can't say things later. Let's just keep going.
So we learned in chapter 6 as well that, you know, there's this plan that Simon and Lene have to basically give Jackie the slip. They're staying at this hotel right now, but what they're going to do is they're going to go on this excursion, have their bags sent to a train separate or a boat separately, and then go straight from their excursion to the boat without going back to the hotel. They're going to use assumed names to like book this boat and everything. So Jackie won't have any idea that these two are leaving the hotel and traveling up the Nile River without her. They're like, fuck, this is going to be great. All of our problems are going to be over. Hooray. So chapter 7 starts with Simon and Lene setting off on their excursion and having their luggage sent off. Jackie doesn't seem to realize anything is going on as she watches the two go off. Poirot goes to this island before lunch where we're introduced to yet another couple of characters. So we meet this really dirty looking young man and an Italian archaeologist named Ricchetti. While they're on this island, they're like going through this museum, chit-chatting here and there, but Poirot spots Mrs. Allerton busy like outside of the museum trying to get a group of kids away from her. But anyway, he goes up and he's like, they start discussing potential motives for people to like kill somebody or commit a crime and how difficult their potential crimes would be to solve. A few of the people that they mentioned were Simon, first of all, and Poirot thinks like his crime would be a simple one. It wouldn't be very subtle, easily solved. So I'm like, okay. Lene would be an Alice in Wonderland, like Queen of Hearts type deal where it's just like off with her head. Like that's the crime that she'd commit. Poirot confirms that Jackie would commit a murder, but she's kind of still a puzzle to Poirot. Andrew Pennington is brought up, possible motive, strong sense of self-preservation, it's mentioned. And Mrs. Otterborn even is mentioned because she just has this kind of vanity about her. So, Cody, I only go through that list because clearly there are, I think, four people on there that mean a lot to us as we're making our predictions. Pennington was in one of our takes last week as being an orchestrator of things. Obviously hard to like divorce the story from Jackie, Lene, or Simon. So I bring that up because it seems relevant that Christy is doing so as well. Anyway, so Poirot gives another example of motive where he's basically saying, hey, person A killed person B to benefit C, which is just an example of like, hey, A doesn't really get anything out of this. So it's possible that the murder that is potentially coming up in this story could have nothing to do with someone's like primary motivation. They're just trying to help somebody else. So we've got that whole thing going on too. Okay, so we head back to the hotel where on the boat, the young dirty man from before is talking about how just like awful the pyramids are and how they represent human suffering for the sake of ego. So it's like the 1930s and we just have this socialist dude talking about how shitty capitalism is. It's great. They get back to the hotel where Jackie is dressed to go out on her excursion. So clearly she doesn't think that anything is up right now with Simon and Lene having left already. And then Poirot later waits for the train to take him to the boat for his next destination. He's on the train with the Allertons. The Otterborns meet up with the steamboat on the way with them. Poirot finds himself on the train car seated across from Miss Van Schuyler and Cornelia Robson. So we met them last week. Finally, we get from the train to the boat. Just painting a picture here, full accommodations. It's like a hotel on the water, basically. There's a bar, there's a dining room, there's a smoking room. Like everything that you want is on this boat.
An old-timey cruise ship.
Right, exactly. So Poirot joins Rosalie on the observation deck, and she is just happy to be getting away from people, as she says. Again, Rosalie is a weird character. She just isn't ever happy for some reason. Lene and Simon come out of their cabins and are like, hell yeah. We got to this boat without that bitch Jackie realizing we were here. Vacation's back on. Honeymoon saved. Until there's just like this diabolical laugh and Jackie just like emerges from the shadows and is like, well, 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 you guys tried to get away. Well, here I am. So once again, Simon and Lene are freaking out. And Simon, it's overheard him say, we can't run away forever. We've got to go through with it now. So later on, Lene joins Poirot in the ship saloon. Total wreck. Once again, asking what to do. And Poirot asks a very interesting question, which was, why doesn't she just charter a private boat? So as Cody was saying before, we get this explanation now about how Simon insisted on them going on this boat. And she attributes that to their difference in money. Because Simon doesn't understand that Lene has buku bucks and can just charter their private boat. He's like, no, no, no. Let's save a couple bucks. Go on the public one with the whole gang from the hotel. So that's where we find ourselves with Lene realizing, looking around, that she's making a lot of enemies on this boat. More and more people are kind of just not huge fans of Lene. So this chapter was mostly nothing with the introduction of a few people, but there's some details in there that just kind of raised my eyebrows. Obviously, the big one being, how the fuck did Jackie know to go to the boat? Because the only other person other than Simon, Lene, Pennington, and Poirot, but there's nobody outside of those guys. Like, that's it. So who told her?
I also think it's like strange that like Lene is so used to people being like, you're so perfect and great. Like, I wonder where she's getting the thought of like, I'm making enemies, you know? That's not necessarily very fleshed out.
Yeah, I think it comes in part from, so Jackie obviously is the big one. I think the other people that aren't super impressed with her are Rosalie.
Yeah,
is the first. And then
she's been vocal about that. Yeah.
This younger man that just joined us on this trip, we'll learn his actual name later on. It isn't said yet, but he's like kind of being his like anti-capitalist self. Everything about Lene, he hates.
Yeah, we'll learn more about that later. It's just so interesting that, like, you know, for the first time in her life, she's like, people aren't just like blown over by how great I am. And she almost feels it like as like an existential sense of danger.
Yeah. Yep.
Chapter 8. So Mrs. Allerton tells her son, Tim, that she's invited Perot to join them for dinner. And Tim's like, why? Why would we hang out with someone? And she's like, because he's a cool world famous detective. Fucking grow up. You love detective novels. And he's like, brr. He's like, I guess. Anyway, Poirot comes over, sits down with them. And Miss Allerton's like being nice and trying to talk to him and just trying to chit chat. Tim is pretty cold the whole dinner. They're trying to like identify all the passengers on the manifest. They're trying to go one by one. And they come across Linnea and Simon. And she remarks that they're like the lions of the trip. Like almost like I took that as like a zoo reference.
Mm.
Like something to kind of be looked at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they also find, you know, like, oh, there's a Mr. Pennington. He's pretty handsome. And Tim's like, whatever. Very weird vibes between Tim and his mom.
I mean, per usual.
Yeah, I know. So after a little bit, Poirot meets up with Jackie as he's like heading to like his cabin to go to bed. And he's basically like, Jackie, like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? Like, you keep doing this, like everyone is on edge because of your presence. And like, obviously you're free to do whatever, just as like Linnea and Simon can't make you not come.
Mm.
But like, what are you doing here? What are you doing?
Jackie, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Go home.
Anyway, so he basically tells her like, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, right? And she's like, I don't care. And he's like, God damn it. So he's trying to fall asleep. And Poirot overhears Simon kind of in the hallway in passing, just kind of like walking down. And he's repeating what he said earlier, which is, we've got to go through with it now. And Perot's like, God fucking damn it. I just wanted to go on vacation. And something's a brewing.
Yeah. We just learned some weird stuff in this chapter. Like, there's this, like I said before, this dirty looking young communist man is, his name's Mr. Ferguson. And it's like, also, I mean, Jackie, you shouldn't be here for other reasons, but Ferguson, like, why are you here?
I have theories.
I do too. When I'm reading this, I'm like, okay, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
More unlike the other than all of the other things.
Yes, far, far unlike the others.
So he's just like pissed about everything they're going to see. He doesn't have money or nice clothes or anything. It's like, okay, what is this guy? I also just found it really interesting the way that Jackie is described, because before she was described as having a face of malicious defiance and dark flaming triumph. And now it's described as just acute misery.
That's brutal. That's brutal stuff.
It really doesn't get that much worse. Like, how can you describe being in more pain? Like, oh, how are you today? Acute misery. It's just acute misery for me.
I'm acutely miserable.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just, but like you said, Cody, the way this chapter ends with Simon saying, you know, we have to go through with it now, I just seriously can't get the thought out of my head that something super fucking fishy is going on with this Simon guy. I don't know what it is, but he's in cahoots with somebody. He is not innocent.
No, it's pretty sus.
It's so sus. And it's up to us as readers to suss it out.
That's right.
Okay, moving on along to chapter 9. Perot and Cornelia Robson get off the boat to go look at a temple, leaving the older Van Schuyler still sleeping on board. Linnea and Pennington are walking around. He wants her signature on a bunch of documents when they get back on board. He's got a bunch of business stuff that needs taking care of. Back on board, there's like an air of calmness, and Linnea is feeling a lot less anxious all of a sudden for like no particular reason. But Andrew Pennington, he's got this stack of documents for her to sign, which she's reading all of them through very carefully. And Pennington seems a little put off that she's reading everything, Simon comes up and is like, yeah, couldn't be me. I just trust people to like do what they're going to tell me to do. Like, and okay.
It's like, yeah, well, you're a moron. So
Simon's like, man, Lene, I honestly didn't know you could read.
Good for you. Read?
Yeah.
Do you read? Well, it's also weird because like we keep having these sick theories of like I keep trying to like find reasons to not make Simon any type of like suspect in my head for any possible crime. And then when Pennington pulls up this super sketch, like, oh yeah, these docs, they're nothing. I don't read them. Just sign right here. It's cool. It's actually really cool. Cool and good. And Simon's, he's like, right, Simon? And Simon's like, babe, I just signed shit. Someone put something in front of me. I don't even look at it. I just say, right, where's my name? Blue ink. Let's go.
Yeah. Like we've all seen movies when they're like, oh, here, just sign this. And then your life is gone.
Yeah, Simon's like, yeah, like, you know, Zuckerberg isn't even going to be born for another 50 years. Like, we're good.
Does that make Pennington Zuck, or does that make him
Pennington? Is that Pennington would become like Zuck's slimy lawyers?
Yeah, or the who's the guy, the Justin Timberlake character?
Oh yeah, that's more Simon.
Yeah, for real. Okay, so as Lene is working through these papers that she's reading and signing, Mr. Fanthorpe walks up to her and tells her how impressed he is with her business acumen. It's oddly noted here that the backs of his ears are red. I don't know why that is. I keep saying these little details because I don't want to miss something and just have to bring it up later.
I think he kind of is like, ah, like doing business like a business lady, no? Very impressive. And she's like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to fuck off now. And it's like, I think that's like a sign of embarrassment. Like, yeah, he basically tried to like chat up Lene. And she was like, whatever.
Pennington is like, okay, dude, this is fucking annoying. We're trying to do some business here in this very public space. Can you leave us alone?
Yeah. And then he's like, I guess. And then Pennington's like, we'll do this later. Enough of this. Yeah. Like, it's like, dude, this is your idea.
Yeah, very abruptly just kind of like shuffles all the papers together and is like, I got the like more important ones that I needed. Good to go now. So
yeah.
Pennington goes and fucks off. Then we see Cornelia run in with some shit that she was supposed to get for her relative Van Schuyler. She's getting flack for taking too long with it. Miss Bowers comes in with Van Schuyler's medication. This is all just building on the fact that Van Schuyler is very high maintenance and totally just fucking sucks.
Yeah, like, she sucks.
We didn't get any of this in Little Women, but I'm just assuming that this is what it's like traveling with Aunt March. Like,
oh, yeah, dude.
She's got medication everywhere and no one is ever on time despite like having the correct time on their watch. Anyway, she sucks. So Van Schuyler, we don't like her. Mr. Ferguson starts to spout at Hercule how people like Van Schuyler and Lene are better off shot. They don't work for anything. They don't do the world a bit of good. And what the world really needs right now is violent revolution so we can destroy things and build them back up in a more equitable fashion. I don't know what to do with Ferguson at this point. I don't know if he's just talk or what, but
I have a very specific theory about him that'll come later.
Okay. So when asked what he does for a living, Poirot explains that he's a detective and he's not in Egypt with the Doyles. He's on vacation, to which Ferguson replies that he, being Ferguson, is also not on vacation, but rather, quote, studying conditions. What? Dude.
This to me sounds like some bullshit and I'll get into it later. I can't right now because we haven't.
Okay, so let me just cruise through the rest of this. So Mr. Poirot walks back outside onto the deck, bumps into a man and woman who appear guilty when they're seen by him, but we don't really hear about them for the rest of this section, so we'll just leave that there. He then runs into Mrs. Otterbourne, who is not doing well with the ship's movements. She's going to call out Rosalie for being ungrateful in front of everyone, but Hercule convinces her to go back to her cabin, and he's going to go fetch Rosalie. So Poirot finds Rosalie with the Allertons, actually like happy seemingly, but immediately gets bummed out when mom needs her.
Yeah, she was vibing.
And then mom's like, hey, I need to come tell you how much of an ungrateful daughter you are. It's like, fuck. Poirot ends the chapter reflecting on the fact that he is glad to no longer be young. And that takes us into chapter 10. Look, I will say this right now. Some of these chapters are starting to feel real long without a whole lot going on. And I'm just trying to like steel trap details in my head so that I don't forget stuff as we go.
The thing is, I'm trying to do that too, but I'm also trying to be like, where are the red herrings?
Well, that's what I don't...
Where's the ruse? I'm yes. trying to sniff it out. Because like, we literally, Poirot goes down a hallway and he's like, he sees two like employees of the boat, right? They're not yes. guests. And it's like, one's like an engineer and one looks more like, I don't know, service-y. She's sure. like pretty, she's like slightly pretty, I guess. Like, but then they kind of look at him and they just kind of like leave. And he's like, am I supposed to pay attention to that?
See, this is why I would be reading this entirely differently if someone was just like, hey, you should read this book by an unnamed author and it's just named On the Nile. I would go into it and be like, okay, we've got some drama going on here. I wouldn't be like dissecting every sentence because I know that something bad is going to happen. I know that this is going to be a mystery. And so it almost is like, it would be more fun almost if I didn't know that some shit was about to go down.
Right. Chapter 10. So it is the morning now. The travelers are like getting pumped because the big steamer cruise that they're on, we're going to another temple. And Cornelia specifically, very psyched about this temple. Simon bumps into Poirot and explains that like Linnea is less stressed about Jackie. And Poirot's like, that's great. And it's like, well, we took your advice. She decided to face her head on. And like ever since, she's like no longer like psyched out by Jackie. Like, we're okay with her being here. And Poirot's like, awesome, man. I'm glad you're a fucking grown up. Because that was his whole thing. He's like, why don't you people just talk? And they're like, no, we can't. He's like, all right, well, you know, figure it out then.
Isn't it just like the biggest baby behavior ever to be like, hey, do you remember that thing that you told me to do 2 days ago? Well, I'm doing it now, but because I decided to.
Yeah, it was your idea, but like I'm the one who actually had to do it. So I get all the credit. And Poirot's like, I literally don't care, man. Poirot's like, don't you people understand that like I'm on vacation right now?
Yeah, hey, why are you talking to me at all?
Simon. Yeah, speaking of, Poirot then like bumps into Mr. Pennington and like they're just kind of chalking and Pennington's like, yeah, I've known Linnea since she was very, very young. Her father's like very close to me. He's like, awesome. And they're also, and like Pennington's also like, well, you know, Linnea is super rich, right? And like, it's really good that she's so good at being a businesswoman because she's so loaded and someone's got to take care of all that. Poirot's like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this book, I'm not trying to be like dismissive of the text. It's just that so much of this book is people volunteering information to world famous detective Hercule Poirot and him being like, yeah, great. Two thumbs up.
Yeah.
That sounds nice. Thanks for letting me know. That'll never escape my brain.
Why would you ever tell a world renowned detective that you have the capacity and motive for murdering someone?
Dude, again, that's why I think like, the Jackie Simon like thing of like if they're in a commotion together, how come when the one guy on earth who's gonna figure it out is like on your vacation with you, why would you then volunteer yourself as a potential suspect of something that you're maybe gonna do? This doesn't make sense. Like if we're on like a cruise and like down at the swim up bar, I'm just chatting up someone and they're like, I'm like, well, what do you do? And they're like, oh, well, like, I'm a detective. I'm like, oh, well, like, how good of a detective are you? And they're like, yeah, I solve like dozens of murders, bank heists, you name it. I'm like the best in the world. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. You're not learning shit about me.
Right.
I don't know.
You wouldn't be like, okay, but you're on vacation though, right? And then they're like, yeah. Like, okay, great. Well, as long as you're not on the job, I might fucking kill someone right now.
This is off the record.
Yeah, off the record.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling pretty squirrely right now. You want to see my gun? He's like, yeah.
None of it is admissible. None. You're on vacation.
And he's like, that's not how this works, but yeah, go off, King.
Yeah.
Anyway, Linnea and Simon are basically like, touring the temple's dumb. We don't want to do it anymore. And like, they kind of go up to this cliff and Linnea is like, oh, the sun feels so good. She's kind of like sunbathing or whatever. Simon is just kind of, you know, zoning out. And after a while, they see people like down, like shouting and waving at them. And then Simon's like, oh shit. He springs into action and like swings Linnea away. Just as this massive tumbling boulder from higher up on the cliff comes crashing down and almost hits them. Linnea is like, you know, shaken up. Poirot is like, you know, he hears the commotion. He comes running out from the steamer and he's like, get her inside and give her some 1930s lady medication. Just like calm her down. Oh my God. It's like what he says. I don't know. He's like, she's hysterical.
Give her like morphine or something. Morphine.
Yeah, exactly. But as they're going to the boat, Simon is like so mad. He's like, someone did this. But then like they see Jackie, who's coming from the boat. And Simon's like, oh, well, maybe it was an accident. Like implying that he thought that Jackie may have pushed the boulder. But now that he sees that it was like physically impossible for, unless Jackie has like some teleportation powers and that's where this book is going.
Oh my God. Just some weird like Brendan Fraser, the mummy action going on.
Yeah, I don't think that's what it is. So now we're like, okay, well, so at least Jackie wasn't like physically involved with the pushing.
Yeah.
And Poirot's like, okay, well, this was pretty crazy. Like, let's just get everyone onto the steamer and let's just call it a day. And that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah. What's your theory here? Accident? Purposeful?
Strikes me as purposeful. These ruins have existed undisturbed for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now a boulder just goes a tumbling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like super plausible. Like, sure, I guess maybe. Like, you know, rocks have to come down at some point. It seems
very fishy, but with Jackie on the boat, we don't really have strong motive for anyone else necessarily. That's the biggest right thing. Now. Is like at this time, we can't really assume anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a sketchy situation and we're going to keep thinking about it, but you can't really say with like really any confidence that one or a person or another did it.
Yeah. So this is the other part where I was saying, like, take accountability. My theory on Simon being involved somehow seems pretty dumb after that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there are multiple groups of people going after Linnea's money somehow.
Right.
Which is definitely possible.
Definitely possible. Like, two groups of people unbeknownst to each other as violent actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at this point in the story where, like, okay, so we just missed getting crushed by a boulder and I'm ready for someone to die.
The thing is, if you're Simon and you want Linnea to die so you can inherit the money, like that's like if he was going to do a murder of her, it would be for the money, right?
That's what my guess would be.
Here's the thing. The Simon acting alone narrative doesn't actually, now that I'm actually just thinking about it, that doesn't make sense. Because if he's so worried about him getting her money, why would he be like, yeah, babe, sign whatever papers this guy tells you? And if he wanted her dead, why wouldn't he just like bail and let the boulder crush her? Chick wasn't paying attention to anything.
Yeah, I hand up. Look, it's a super weak theory.
Well, like, I don't know, unless like he wanted to do it a specific way. But like, I don't know.
At this point, without any actual crime being committed, but knowing that there will be one at some point in this book, we still don't know who is going to die.
No.
We don't know that. And so I am just throwing out while I'm reading any fucking thing, anything that seems fishy.
Right.
Useless. I'm terrible at reading this type of book, I found out. Okay. So
I'm just hyper fixating on everything.
I know. It's terrible. I'm an overthinker at my core. This book was not written for me. So chapter 11, the gang is navigating this waterfall area and people are either like taking camel rides around it or they're remaining on the boat. Notable that our Italian archaeologist that we met decided to take an unadvisable excursion by himself, which I thought was actually kind of funny because they're like, dude, don't do that. And he's like, but I must. They're like,
I want to see the temple.
I want to see a temple. And they're like, you aren't going to be able to find a car. You're going to get scammed out of your money. Nothing's insured. You're going to get fucking killed. And he just has like an answer for everything. Hilarious. But anyway, he goes off on his own to do this excursion. Meanwhile, Poirot and Mrs. Allerton are alone on the boat. And Poirot asks Mrs. Allerton the meaning of the word fey, F-E-Y. And she defines it as happiness that's almost too good to be true, or elation that's leading to tragedy. And Poirot asks her about how she had said that word describing Lene moments before Lene was almost crushed by a boulder. And Mrs. Allerton's like, yeah, it is pretty fucking weird. Anyway, do you know who I really hate? This Joanna chick that my son's friends with. And Poirot's just like, okay.
All right.
At the same time, Rosalie is talking to Tim about how much she envies his mother. Van Schuyler is pissed about Cornelia going up the waterfall without asking permission and hanging out with this socialist Ferguson guy. However, now she is hanging with this doctor on board, Dr. Bessner, who Van Schuyler is compelled to like because he's got connections to some royalty and things like that. Okay, so Lene gets back from her excursion. She opens this telegram that she thinks is for her and opens it to something about potatoes and beetroots. And the archaeologist Ricchetti, being back at this point, snatches it away from her and says that it was meant for him and that she should be like more careful in opening mail. Like she should check names, and she tries to apologize and he's like really upset about it, which I'm just like, okay, potatoes and beetroot. Again, I'm overthinking things, but like code for something, who knows? Anyway, we've got that going on. Simon and Lene then go ashore to just kind of fuck around. Poirot watches them leave and finds himself standing next to Jackie along the rail, who, again, has this look of an inner consuming fire. And she's saying they don't care anymore and starts to say, I'd kill him sooner, dot, 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 but kind of is left trailing off. Cody, are you ready to meet some new people?
Yes, I actually am.
Great, because Poirot is met by an old acquaintance named Colonel Race. So Race had met Poirot during a dinner party where, of course, the host was killed.
Yes. Okay. So quick timeout.
Yeah. Let's do it.
The back of the book that we got. So Death on the Nile is 17 books into the Hercules Poirot like saga. Shocking that we've only seen two people from previous stories so far. Like the Hercules Poirot extended universe is thick and expansive. But this Colonel Race guy seems like a really interesting dude, so I'm going to let you continue.
He does seem cool, but Colonel Race is on the boat on government business, so he could have taken the government boat up the Nile because it runs day and night, unlike this one that makes stops. So Poirot kind of figures out, and Race confirms this, that he's there because he needs to be on this boat investigating one of the passengers. Mm-hmm. Now, the catch is that Race doesn't know exactly which one of the passengers he's supposed to be looking out for. What he knows is that it's someone of American, Irish, or French descent, and he's after them because they've murdered 5 or 6 people, and they are part of some sort of scheme to spark rebellion. Okay, sounds like somebody we kind of know.
Yeah.
Poirot doesn't know for sure who that might be, so he doesn't say anything, which is a good thing because you don't want to be throwing someone under the bus just because of a hunch you have. But at the same time, maybe like, yeah, this guy's kind of out here. I don't know what this dude is about. Maybe check him out first. He then explains the whole drama with Jackie and Lene to Race and the whole boulder accident. And Poirot ends the chapter because he is getting mad nervous that some shit is about to go down on this boat.
Yeah, he's getting so nervous that he's straight up like, I told the Doyles to beat it. and they won't.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, as you're alluding to, I think we had a very similar idea. Let me just read to you the passage describing the suspect that Race is pursuing. There is no need to be mysterious with you. We've had a good deal of trouble out here one way or another. It isn't the people who ostensibly lead the riots that we're after. It's the men who are very cleverly put the match to the gunpowder. There were three of them. One is dead. One is in prison. And a third is a man with five or six cold-blooded murders to his credit. One of the most cleverest paid agitators that ever existed. He's on the boat. I know from a passage in a letter that passed through our hands, decoded it. X will be on the Karnak trip 7th to 13th. It didn't say under what name X would be passing. He is of American, Irish, or French descent. So, senior commie, Mr. Ferguson, very famously, like early, but like pre-World War II, like communist, anarchist, socialist, very commonly, like did a lot of riots and strikes all throughout continental Europe and the Americas. Mm. It seems pretty strongly alluded that that's Race's man. And I wonder why Poirot wouldn't give up this guy.
Yeah, I mean, he knows enough about this dude already. I mean, Poirot has heard him say, am I correct, stuff about rich people being better off dead.
When Ferguson and Ricchetti were arguing about, like, you know, like, you know, basically like the creation of monuments at the expense of the lower class. And then like him basically having like an Eat the Rich monologue discussing Linné directly to Poirot, like he's saying it.
Right.
And specifically, like, he's an agitator, someone that puts like the match to the gunpowder, someone who would like basically like inspire others to commit riots. So, but you know, we could be wrong, but this guy seems to fit the bill.
We'll have to wait and see.
That's right. So chapter 12, we're visiting temples again. Cornelia does some needlework in the salon, just the hangout area. At the other end, the Doyles are playing bridge together with Colonel Race and Mr. Pennington. So it looks like Colonel Race has incorporated himself well in the cruise ship. Jackie walks in and takes a seat next to Cornelia. And she makes a comment about like, oh, it's like it's a beautiful honeymoon night. And it's like, oh, yeah, maybe for a woman that stole a friend's man. And she's humming this song about stealing another woman's man. And it's all very on the surface.
Not hiding a thing.
No. So basically, this is going on. And Linnae's like, I'm just going to go to bed. Good night, honey. Leave Simon. What transpires is pretty much the most significant like interaction we see between Jackie and Simon since their cafe interaction that we saw. And so they start arguing with each other. Jackie is fucking hammered, and she's so hammered, and Cornelia doesn't want to be here. Poor Cornelia is like, hey, can I go to bed? And she's like, no, more shots. Cornelia's like, no. Cornelia, poor Cornelia is like so whipped by her, like, is it grandma or mom?
I think it's her cousin. It's her like cousin. Her second or third cousin or something. Yeah.
Yeah. The relationships are very strange, but she's so like used to being like battered around by her that she like can't say no to Jackie. And so she has to like witness this absolute meltdown that Jackie has. And Simon's like trying to ignore her. He's like reading like a magazine or something, and you can tell he's mad, but he's like, anything I say is going to like make this a problem. And Jackie gets like drunker and more mad that she's being ignored until the point where she pulls out her gun and aims it at Simon. Simon's like, well, time to go. Stands up, but Jackie fires, shoots Simon in the leg. So now we have just a total catastrophe. So we should have also said that Mr. Fanthorp was there. He was also on the deck at the time.
He was the fourth and only person.
So again, there's four people here. Fanthorp and Cornelia. Jackie just shot Simon, and they're two witnesses. So he's like, hey, I need help, but we got to let everyone know this is an accident. Like she didn't mean to hurt me. And Jackie is totally distraught. She's weeping. She drops the gun and kicks it under one of the couches.
Hmm.
Okay. Next, all of them go down to find the doctor. The doctor comes, and so the doctor and Fanthorp basically have to help carry Simon to the doctor's quarters for treatment. And Cornelia basically like has to take charge of Jackie because she's threatening to kill herself. Mm-hmm. So as they patch up Simon, Dr. Bessner summons Miss Bowers, Cornelia's cousin, Mrs. Van Schuyler's nurse, to basically take care of Jackie and inject her with morphine and be with her all night because she's hysterical and she needs to like calm down. He also asks Mr. Fanthrope to go up and get Jackie's gun, and like then we'll deal with that later. When Mr. Fanthrope goes, he's trying to find the pistol, but it's gone. Then Dr. Bessner's like, that's super not good, but I gotta prevent this guy from dying. I have to do like battlefield level of triage on this fucking guy and get a slug out of his leg, so that's bad. But you know, that's, we don't know of anyone else on there, so who took that fucking gun? That's where the chapter ends. We just don't know.
Yeah. So this all happens very, very quickly with, you know, people clearing out of the saloon. And then it's like a matter of what, half an hour with, you know, we're talking about like 11 o'clock or so. We'll get more into the, like the actual timeline of things later here. But it happens really fast. And the only people that really notice anything, again, we're talking about a small gun that's shot that isn't particularly loud. And they're in an enclosed space. So for all of you being like, okay, somebody shoots a gun on a boat, why did more people not hear this? It's a big boat. They're in a room. It's a small little pistol. It's described as sounding on the outside like maybe a cork on like a champagne bottle coming off. Right. So
big boat, small gun.
Right. So Simon, a little fucked up. I don't know, Cody, how you felt about this, but I thought that it was particularly weird how insistent he was that Jackie was not blamed for anything and that he takes all the blame on himself. Did you find that weird?
Seems weird. Maybe guilt. I mean, so he was shot. So when we're saying he got shot in the leg, he was shot like below the knee and the shin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
This may be two. I think it's one of two things. Either they're in cahoots, he's trying to shield her from responsibility as possible. If they're in cahoots, why is she shooting him? Anyway, doesn't she know that any injury to any person before like the invention of penicillin is basically a death sentence? Whatever, we've been there. But also, it may also be him being like, God damn it, she actually shot me. Like, I'm such an asshole. Like, no, like this will ruin her life. Like, she can't. Like, maybe it's just him finally feeling bad for what he did. I think it's one of those two things. You know, he's either trying to protect her for his own selfish reasons, or he's trying to protect her because he's finally feeling selfless.
Yeah.
Could be. Maybe he was shocked. Maybe he was in shock. You know, he just got shot. Talking crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the dude like just went limp over a chair, basically. Small gun, but still took his leg out.
It's really easy to go into shock.
Yeah,
the body just does it. Just happens sometimes. So maybe that.
Okay. So chapter 13 begins with Colonel Race knocking on our guy Hercule Poirot's door and is like, hey, man, Lene Doyle is dead.
Bum, bum, bum.
What? She was shot through the head last night
in her bed.
In her bed. So Race and Poirot go to Lene's cabin where Dr. Bessner tells them, as Cody said, she was shot at close range by a small bullet, likely a .22 caliber.
Mm.
Much like the one that Jackie had.
Mm.
Lene was asleep. The murderer must have crept in at night and shot her at point blank range. On the wall is the letter J, smeared in blood, where it looks like Lene seemingly used her finger potentially to smear the blood on the wall to call out the first initial of the murderer, the person who did it. Poirot is like, all right, I know who Jay might be. He's like, Jackie has basically admitted to me that she wants to kill either Lene, Simon, or both of them. So Bessner then puts the time of death between midnight and 2 a.m. the previous night. Naturally, everyone's like, okay, well, where the hell was Simon? Bessner tells them then that Simon was shot last night by Jackie as well. So all of this evidence is just kind of piling up, and Poirot, not knowing any of the facts of the night before, is like, doesn't look good for our girl Jackie here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then the men leave Lene's body in the cabin, lock the door, because they need to go down to actually get all the facts straight. So they go down to the smoking room. And it's there that they rule out Jackie for the murder because she was supposedly with Miss Bowers all night.
Morphined to the gills.
Exactly. Yes. So like physically incapable of doing this thing. The person that found the body was Lene's maid that morning. At this point, Bessner goes off to wake up.
It's also
up.
Saying that like she's kind of ruled out because she was in shock at finding the body.
Right. So not just a maid who did it for, you know, who knows what reason.
Found someone and like fainted and had to like go to like the doctor.
Right. So with this, Bessner goes off to wake up and tell Simon, which leaves Hercule and Race there to hang out, hold court, and get some accounts of what happened in the saloon the night before. So Poirot brings in Fanthorpe and Cornelia, and he gets all the events from the night before in a lot of detail. And everything that is brought up is basically ruling out Jackie as a possibility. Because from the time that Jackie shot Simon in the leg, dropped her gun, and kicked it under a sofa, someone was with her from that moment until the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it was Fanthorpe and Cornelia, or when Fanthorpe and Cornelia pass her off to Miss Bowers, someone was with her the entire time. So it seems like Jackie's alibi kind of checks out. So what we don't fully understand, though, is, okay, there had to have been another person looking into the room watching this scene take place to go and find a pistol. Because if it was kicked under the couch, it's very unlikely that somebody would have just found it on accident. And we're believing Cornelia's story, we're believing Fanthorpe's story, that they wouldn't have had time to go back, grab the gun, and then go do this thing. Fanthorpe took a matter of 5 minutes between going back to look for the gun and then going back to meet up with the other people. So everybody that we know of that was in the saloon, alibis check out. There had to have been some other person watching this to grab this gun and kill Lene. Poirot asks Fanthorpe at this point, he's like, hey man, what are you doing in Egypt? And Fanthorpe is like, vacation? Hanging out? I don't know.
Dude, it's like, I was like, man, what are you doing?
Did you not have any time from the time that you left to the time that you got here to figure out a way to just say, yes, I'm on vacation?
There's also some super sketch details where he's like, well, Paul, did you hear anything else? He's like, well, I kind of heard the sound of a splash, maybe like 4 a.m. He's like, you heard a splash? He's like, I don't know. I was half asleep. Or I was like, hey, Cornelia, did you hear a splash? And she's like, I couldn't. My room is on the side of the boat that's like docked. So there's no room to like really do a splash. And he's like, okay, Cornelia, you're good to go. Get out of here.
Right. At this point, Poirot's done with both Cornelia and Fanthorpe, but he brings in Miss Bowers. And Bowers mentions that, you know, she was with doing stuff for Van Schuyler until she got a knock on the door and then just attended to Jackie in her room the whole night. So we have Jackie completely cleared by the end of the chapter. Alibi checks out. And it seems like we can also clear, unless she's lying, Miss Bowers. We can probably clear Cornelia unless she's just doing a great acting job. Simon didn't do it because he was down with the leg the whole night. Dr. Bowers didn't, or Dr. Bessner didn't do it. So, Cody, this is where we come to the end of our reading today. That's the end of the chapter. And I think it makes the most sense just to go into our whodunit segment. So, yes. The first thing I want to do before we introduce new takes for this week is just remind our dear listener what we were kind of going with last week, which was essentially, kind of broad strokes, Windlesham going to get back involved with things, involved with the trustees, is kind of what you were saying to
the Windlesham conspiracy is like,
yep.
Windlesham has kind of incorporated the Pennington
mm-hmm.
and like the New York crew, because he went to Canada And I was just kind of like, why? Like, why go to North America? Because Pennington, the uncle who wants her to sign all those papers, is in New York and he's in charge of the trust.
Yeah. And that's like another layer of one of the things that I was saying is I was like, OK, Andrew Pennington is going to kill. I think last week I said Simon and try to blame the whole thing on Jackie. So accountability. Whoops. Not Simon. Lene is dead. Rest in peace. So the one other kind of take that I wrote down from last week was that Tim Allerton is bankrolled to do some dirty work. That is so far neither confirmed nor denied.
My Windlesham conspiracy kind of goes out the door because like he wants access to that money. Yeah. There's no good reason why he would want her dead unless he's in some weird thing where like maybe the papers that Lene was signing sign over the trust to Pennington and then like Windlesham gets a slice, but that doesn't sound like the motivations for a guy who by all accounts was like, I like Lene a lot. It just so happens that she's rich, but I'm rich and I was always going to marry rich. So like, I don't know. I feel like my Windlesham conspiracy kind of got blown out of the water today.
Yeah, it could. I'm not ready to give up on Windlesham entirely yet.
I think he's sus. I don't know. I don't like it.
I just think
my original motivations for him wanting to get with Lene and the money have taken like it's gone sideways a little bit.
Okay, Cody. Takes for this week. Who done it?
I mean, I feel like we kind of have like Chekhov's communist with this mm-hmm. one. This Ferguson guy, like if he's the one that Ray says he is, this guy's just a murderer. He's out here like trying to inspire revolution and revolt, known to not like Lene and, you know, made allusions to lining people up against a wall. I don't know. He could be skulking around waiting to like, the idea that like, all right, there could have been someone overhearing you. Like if he's like kind of listening to this rising commotion from outside, maybe like having a cig or something, who knows? All of a sudden, hears a pop, looks in. Jackie has shot Simon, watches her kick the gun underneath the seat. They leave. He's like, sweet, free gun, untraceable to me. Sneaks in, kills Lene. Hears a splash, throws the gun overboard. That's where my mind went.
Yeah, I feel like that. I don't know. I feel like that is more my feeling on it is that Ferguson is more of a red herring than anything else. I think he is.
I just laid out the case. If it is him, I don't believe it. But
yeah, yeah. My whole thinking is I still think Pennington is involved in this. Like my thinking on this really hasn't changed very much since last week.
I think Pennington is. Yeah.
And
the one with the most access to the estate and the one who's been pushing papers to be signed right before multiple death attempts.
Yeah. And another kind of strange theory that I had was why did Fanthorpe stay in the saloon for as long as he did? Part of what I'm wondering is like, did we have involvement from somebody in the room at the time?
It would have reminded me was fan because it referenced someone who like was there, but then left. Was that Fanthorpe?
Fanthorpe was reading a book when Jackie started to really go off the rails. Then he closes it and gets up and leaves. But then is brought back in when Cornelia runs out of the room to go grab him.
Right.
And so I'm just one of those four people I feel like has something to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's suspicious to me that Jackie kicked the gun under the sofa when she did.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think Pennington is involved somehow, but I want to put one of those four people on this as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was Jackie involved in some way. But the other thing that I keep thinking to myself is like, okay, Jackie didn't kill her. We can be pretty sure of that. And whoever did do it either wrote that J themselves or the J is there for a reason because Lene put it there. So
I don't buy that. I don't buy the Lene put it there.
Okay. So then somebody put the J on the wall. And who's doing that?
Lene got shot in the head at point blank range.
Right.
This like oh, in her last moments theory. No, she died. Mm-hmm. A 22 is a small caliber, but like, I don't know. I'm not like some ballistics expert, but if you shoot someone in the head with a gun at point blank range, you're going to die. Like above the ear and the side of the head, like that.
Hey, that's what I thought too. I was just watching a commercial the other day for some, due respect, this is not a joke. Somebody that was like a war veteran got shot in the head and survived.
It is possible. It's just like,
yeah, unlikely. So anyway, it's not worth going over the details of that. I'm with you. I don't buy that Lene did it either. So it seems
I just think the J is there because whoever took Jackie's gun to commit the crime knew it was Jackie's. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think that's just the thing, is like they want Jackie to go down for it.
But part of what I'm wondering is the person that's writing the J on there, like, could it be that they're in cahoots with Jackie anyway? Mm-hmm. And they came up with this bizarro plan for Jackie to leave the gun, establish this concrete alibi, mm-hmm. and then have somebody try and frame her for
it. Try and frame her, yeah.
Just to be like more confusing.
Right.
I don't know. My take still remains. Pennington is the guy. Somebody is working for him. Right now, I'm going to put my money on...
Do we know if Ferguson's American?
We don't, I don't think. I don't know.
It didn't explain. And there's no allusions to an accent in his text.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Pennington working with Ferguson to kill Lene and frame Jackie.
Pennington, yeah. Pennington's the puppeteer and Ferguson's the actual like assassin.
Yeah, even though I actually don't... Pennington working with Tim Allerton to kill Lene and frame Jackie.
Because Allerton was pretty sus about talking to Poirot.
Yes.
Because Tim also got the letter from Joanna.
Yes.
And was like, this is fucked up. They shouldn't be getting married.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
I mean, Ferguson was probably spooked that Poirot's a detective because he's a big time criminal. That has nothing to do with this. I think Ferguson's a red herring. Ferguson's just an excuse to get Race on board so we can have two detectives.
Yeah, I also think that part of his deal is, don't you think he'd be a little bit more tunnel visioned in like his mission? Like he's probably riding this boat because he needs to go do some rebellion shit. It's like, how much does he really want to be just like murdering people on a boat?
Murdering the most high profile guests on the boat?
Right, just like for fun? What?
And if he's just supposed to be like, if he's just like political agitation mastermind, he's not just going to go murder people.
Dude, I would die laughing if Cornelia was involved in all of this somehow.
Oh, yeah. She's just some anxious wreck, but actually just a stone cold killer.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy.
All orchestrated by Van Skyler.
I don't know. I will say, though, it was strange for Cornelia to be like, I couldn't hear a splash because I was on the port side and next to the thing. It's like, that's actually the most like observant thing you've ever said. Seemed very prepared.
Yeah. Well,
and I don't know if I'm fixating on that or her being like, my room sucks and it's just a dock.
Well, I was fixating on the fact that Fanthorpe had all the answers to everything right away while Cornelia was really struggling with stuff.
Except for like, why are you here? Exactly. Literally like onomatopoeia typed into the fucking story.
Yeah. Okay. So Pennington working with Tim to kill Lene and frame Jackie. Ferguson, red herring, but still very big on violent protest.
We got to watch out for him, but I don't think he did it.
Okay. All right. Cody, what was your upstream this week? What'd you like?
We got a murder on our hand, man. The case is afoot.
It's the most obvious upstream, you know, Smeagol, whatever you want to call it, of all time.
They lead into each other, though, because my downstream was, I was like, how much do I actually have to hang out with Mrs. Allerton this session? Like, this sucks.
Mine was very similar. I'm like, you know what? I really don't know how much I'm supposed to care about this Van Skyler lady. And like, there are several times throughout this when she's just being an absolute pill to Cornelia and Miss Bowers. And mm-hmm. it's like, okay, this is kind of funny, but like, Do I need to be remembering any of this? Is any of this relevant, important in any way? I don't know.
Don't know.
So that was my downstream. Upstream, I'm totally with you as well. Finally getting the murder here. It feels like we finally have a place that this story is actually going. Feels like letting out a sneeze. Great. Any other thoughts on this section of reading, Cody?
It was great. And it ended with a real bang.
Ha. Okay, so next time we will be reading chapters 14 through 22. That'll be out next week, so stay tuned for that. Feel free to send us an email if you have any questions, comments on this episode or any of the previous ones. We'd be happy to talk about it on the pod. And what else, Cody?
Stay tuned. We're going to figure out who fucking did this thing.
Poirot's on the case. He's got it handled.
I'm not Cody are on the case.
Yeah. We're here just throwing out wild accusations to Pennington, who, to our knowledge, hasn't done anything except been a trustee.
Yeah, him operating in his capacity as trustee. We're like, uh-uh. Fucking murderer, dude. I also keep roping in Windlesham, for as far as we know, he's just chilling in Montreal or something. He's just at some cafe in Toronto, just trying to mind his own goddamn business, has some poutine.
He's just like, what was that? Like, Windlesham, I think that was a stray.
Yeah, from catching strays.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, justice will be served in the end, I'm sure. Stay tuned until next week. This has been the Bibliotheques Podcast.
We'll see y'all soon.